President Obama is in Copenhagen today, gave a speech in which he talked to other world leaders about global climate change and seemed a little bit frustrated at some of the impatience with the failure by these other world leaders to reach an accord on what they can do globally to fight climate change. Here are just a few of the president's remarks today.
We come here in Copenhagen because climate change poses a grave and growing danger to our people. For while the reality of climate change is not in doubt, as the world watches us today, I think our ability to take collective action is in doubt right now. We are convinced, as some of you may be convinced, that changing the way we produce and use energy is essential to America's economic future, that it will create millions of new jobs, power new industries, keep us competitive. We're convinced, for our own self-interest, that the way we use energy, changing it to a more efficient fashion, is essential to our national security. These international discussions have essentially taken place now for almost two decades, and we have very little to show for it other than an increase, acceleration of the climate change phenomenon. Ladies and gentlemen, there's no time to waste. America's made our choice. We have charted our course. We have made our commitments. We will do what we say. It is better for us to act than to talk. Better for us to choose action over inaction, the future over the past. And with courage and faith, I believe that we can meet our responsibilities to our people and the future of our planet. Thank you very much.
It is better for us to act than to talk. Now let's break up into discussion groups and talk more about this. President Obama in Copenhagen today. My friend Joel McCower is on the phone. He is the editor and publisher of GreenBiz.com. He's been writing about green issues and environmental issues for decades now, and was in Copenhagen a few days ago, so I've invited him to join us here today. Joel, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS. Oh, I'm sorry. I actually have to push a button here so everybody else can hear Joel, not just me. Hi, Joel.
Hey, Paul. Great to be here.
By the way, nice job getting out of Copenhagen before the blizzard there. And when I tweeted earlier today that you were going to be on the show, a listener said, and I'm approximating what I think he probably sounded like when he emailed me, isn't it funny that there's a blizzard at a place where they're talking about global warming?
Yeah, right. Where's global warming when we need it?
As if climate change means we don't have winter anymore. We're still having winter, aren't we, Joel?
I believe it is. Yeah, it's still coming as is Santa Claus.
So tell me why we've seen world leadership so slow to action, I mean on a global level, and will this summit change any of that?
Well, that remains to be seen. I mean, this is the last, was supposed to be the last day of the summit. It started a week ago Monday, so we're now 12 days into this, and today was the day that President Obama and a dozen or more other leaders from around the world were supposed to come and sort of, you know, raise their arms in victory and stand and do the photo ops and say, you know, hey, look what we've all done. We're not there yet, and it's 8 p.m. now in Copenhagen, almost 8:15 p.m. According to the latest news, this could go on for a couple more days because they're not yet at an agreement. And what I took away from my brief stay in Copenhagen is how unbelievably complex this is, and how all of these, just amazing sort of turf wars are taking place, where you've got, you know, Brazil battling it out with Saudi Arabia, and I mean, not get into why, but they're having a feud over something, the Maldives Islands are looming large all of a sudden with a bunch of other little island nations that could get buried, and their voices, you know, are much louder, even though, you know, their population collectively is smaller than St. Louis, and it goes on from there, and then of course there's China. And the U.S. has not been, you know, it sort of had this two- or three-faced, you know, position on this. So this is not simply, I mean, it makes, frankly, our healthcare debate look like a game of checkers, a very simple game where we all know the rules.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
What do you think is going to finally be accomplished by all of this? Will there be any kind of agreement that we are going to cut back on fossil fuels, cut back on CO2 emissions, cut back on oil use? Are we going to move towards alternative energy? What's your sense, after being in the midst of this for a few days, of the direction that at least the discussions are headed?
Well, first of all, I think it's important, Paul, to understand that a lot of this stuff is happening anyway. We are cutting back on fossil fuels. We are moving towards alternative energies because the technologies are improving, and we're going to have 10 or 15 electric vehicles or maybe more coming out by the end of 2010 and by 2012. You know, they're going to start to become a regular part, not just these little toys or expensive sports cars, but there's going to be electric, cars from every manufacturer. And that's happening in all sorts of other ways. So our society is becoming more energy efficient, increasingly more dependent on renewable energies and just plain efficiency. So the question is this fast enough at the scale and speed that we need to stem what most scientists believe is a impending crisis? But then where the complexity comes in is how do 192 countries do this together, where some countries like ours, we're the haves, even though everybody's not doing that well these days. We're at least, we've got this sort of infrastructure built in this society that, we get to shop in all these stores and have all this, fairly nice system here compared to a lot of emerging countries that are saying, look, we want to get there too. So how do you expect us to improve our standard of living when we don't, which is by nature going to require, having more vehicles and more, using more energy and therefore creating more carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases? How do we get to do that? You already have it. Now you're telling us we can't have that, and so that's the complication. So I know I'm not answering your question about what's going to happen. I think there will be some kind of agreement. It may be an agreement that gets fleshed out over the next year. There's already talking about a successor to this next December in Mexico, which I think will be a lot nicer weather in Mexico than Copenhagen in December.
Yeah.
So that's where it's happening.
If it's snowing in Mexico City next year, we're screwed.
Exactly.
Now, when you talk about the emerging nations' concerns, is that what caused them to walk out for a little while earlier this week?
Well, I mean, the concerns are, we want to build our society, but we want to do it in a leapfrog kind of way, in the same way that in India and China, they didn't start with landlines and go to cell phones when they got, the people who didn't have telephones, they went right to cell phones, and they're not even building all those telephone lines and stringing in all those landlines the way we did. They want to build their society using the technologies that are being developed in the West, in countries like the U.S., they need help. They need money to pay for these, and so they're saying we'll gladly, build our society in a low carbon fashion that therefore allows us to grow and have the things we want without contributing unduly to climate problems. But you need to pay for that. We need help, and so you need to. We need help from the developed world, the haves, the polluting countries like the U.S. and in Europe. So there's this talk about this $100 billion a year fund that a bunch of countries or private investors in those countries would contribute to in some fashion. I don't know whether it's philanthropy or whether there's a business model behind that. But so that's part of the equation, and that's why they walked out, because they didn't feel that they were being heard or that their interests were being addressed.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Joel McCower about the climate change summit in Copenhagen. A USA Today Gallup poll this week, Joel, says that 55%, more than half of Americans, support a binding agreement that would force this country to cut back on greenhouse gas emissions. But the vast majority think that improving the economy should take precedence. And 42% say new laws to deal with climate change are likely to hurt the economy. 36% say no, they would help the economy. Then there's another poll out of Stanford University that found something a bit different, noting that 40% of Americans said that taking action to curb global warming would help create jobs, and 46% said it would bring a boost to the economy. So we got a battle here between a bad economy in the United States, and a lot of the people who are against doing anything about climate change keep saying, all you're going to do is hurt businesses. But we do seem to have at least some consensus from people that we do have a problem here and that the U.S. has to take the lead and do something about it. What is that connection between trying to fix the climate change problem and business? You write about this all the time at greenbiz.com.
Well, this is a very direct relationship. And we've been hearing about this green economy. President Obama's been talking about it. There have been books and lots of other conversation about it. And that's basically the fact that we have an opportunity right now to reinvent ourselves. So as we're doing now in the automotive industry, we're going to be, you know, electric cars are going to be the norm by the time your daughter is you know, in college. And, you know, we have this great mashup of energy technology, information technology, building technology, and vehicle technology that's going to change what we do, I believe, and create more new, better products and services. It's going to change things as much as the Internet has over the next generation. It's going to be a slow revolution, but all of a sudden we're going to look back and the business models are going to change. Why did we own cars back in the 1900s and early 2000s? We don't really want to own cars. We want the ability to have a whole fleet of cars available for our use, whether it's a pickup truck or a motor scooter or a luxury sedan or a convertible. And so the idea of having mobility but not necessarily owning cars is just, you know, and so we're going to start to see that much the way iTunes, you know, has basically obliterated the phrase record store.
Yeah.
You know, and so all of that is huge in terms of building a new economy and the jobs and the new business opportunities. And one of the questions right now on the table is, who's going to own that? Is America going to own that, like the way we own the Internet and all the technology and all the jobs and businesses that came out of that, the Googles and the Yahoos and the eBays? Or are the Chinese going to own that, or somebody else, and Indians and a bunch of others? Because right now the Chinese have become the leaders in building wind farms and solar panels and a lot of other things. So one of the questions here is, you know, where, how do we bring together this once in a not just a lifetime but maybe a millennium opportunity to create this better world that reduces climate change but create a better economy along the way?
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Joel McCower about the climate summit in Copenhagen that was supposed to wrap up today, but looks like it may go into the weekend. I've got to take a break. We'll come back and talk some more in just a moment here on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris filling in for John Brown and Trish Gazelle. They're both off today. Joel McCower is with me. Joel has been writing about green issues for a couple of decades now. He's editor and publisher of the website greenbiz.com. You can also read his blog at readjoel.com. He was in Copenhagen a few days ago for part of the Global Climate Summit that's going on and some meetings of the World Business Council. Whenever I say the names of things like this, I just picture a bunch of middle-aged white guys like you and me sitting around and talking. Is that who shows up at these things, Joel?
Well, you kind of got it right. I mean, this was the World Business Council on Sustainable Development. This is an organization based in Geneva. It's been around for, maybe 20 years. And, you know, they do some pretty good work, but this was, you know, this was a chance. You know, 192 countries, pretty much everybody was there in Copenhagen, and they had their business weekend, or it's actually called Copenhagen Business Day event. The World Business Council brought about 250 people there, including some CEOs of some very big companies, Coca-Cola, for example. And there was barely a non-white face. I mean, in fact, almost everybody was Northern Europe and North America. And, you know, there were no Indians, no Chinese, no Africans, no South Americans. So here you have this, you know, so-called World Business Council talking about the role of business in this new climate regime, this new low-carbon economy, and all the jobs and business opportunities that we were talking about before. And they're sort of, you know, talking to themselves the same old, same old. I mean, you know, maybe it sounds a little like Congress, but, you know, it was a little disappointing.
What do these corporate guys say? You mentioned, you know, people from Coca-Cola and companies. You know, we're not talking about small businesses that somebody's running out of their garage and, you know, some long-haired guy is showing up and saying, I have a great idea for solar panels. You know, you're talking about major, mega, international companies here. What do these corporate guys say? Do any of them embrace change in regard to this issue?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's really what's interesting about this is that the business community is way ahead of the public and certainly way ahead of the politicians and all this, because there's good business opportunities here. You know, they're making their businesses more efficient. In fact, one of the themes, and this is not just true in Copenhagen, it's one of the themes I've been writing about for a while, is that the business community wants to know what the rules are going to be. They want some kind of, they know that something's coming down, cap and trade or carbon taxes or some kind of regulatory thing that controls, regulates carbon. They want to know, let's get on with it. Because, you know, these guys have to make investments for 5 or 10 years in advance, and they don't know how to place their bets. They don't know sort of what the rules of the game are going to be. Now, having said that, you know, a year and a half ago, some of the enlightened companies, and Coca-Cola and some energy utilities and others have been among them, were saying, just tell us what to do, right? Just mm-hmm. tell us what to do. We want to know the rules. Now that there's some kind of rules that are sort of in the offing, there's a prospect that there will be something, they're telling us, don't tell us what to do. Let us do it our own way.
Uh-huh.
So they want to play by their own rules. But the point is that a lot of these companies, Coca-Cola is actually a real leader. They have introduced some of their biggest footprint, the biggest part of their carbon emissions turns out to be Coke machines and refrigerators. And if you go into the local supermarket and you see a refrigerator with Coke logos on it, that's their company marketing equipment. They've just introduced and partnering with Greenpeace created basically a carbon-free refrigerator and vending machine, and it's going to be all they're going to have in the marketplace. They have 10 million in the world, and they're going to replace them all by 2015, and that's the biggest part. So these companies are doing things, and it's really interesting that somehow that's not getting to the politicians.
Yeah, so leads right to my next question. So why do their advocates, their lobbyists, and their paid-for politicians in Washington, why are they so resistant to this change?
Well, it's a really good question, but it really basically has to do with the fact, and this is true with most political debates these days, certainly with health care, where everybody wants health care, but nobody can agree on how to do it, or how a relatively few incumbent interests basically don't want the apple cart turned. We're talking about trillions of dollars of invested interests. You know, oil and gas companies, coal companies, energy utilities, a bunch of others. And they're gonna, they know this is gonna change. But the longer they can hold out, or the more they can have the rules written in their way, the corporations are there to serve their investors. And any time they take any stand, if a CEO said, you know what, this is about my kids. I see this as, this is not going to squeeze profits, but we have to do this. He could get sued by his investors because, he has to be looking out for the shareholders at all times if it's a publicly traded company.
But I know that you have worked with companies and showed them how they can be green and save money at their bottom line. And I guarantee you, Coke is not changing out 10 million soda machines out of the goodness of their heart. They must be saving money on that. So that's the way to appeal to them, isn't it?
In some cases, what Coke is doing is simply to stay in business. That in the developed world, they were basically being thrown out of countries like Pakistan or having their facilities burned because they were polluting the water table. So they actually created a global commitment to not lower the water table. In other words, leave the water wherever they do business in as good a shape as when they arrived. And it's because their license to operate was threatened. And we're seeing a lot of companies come to the table and make changes, not simply because it's profitable, because it's the only way they can stay in business. Walmart's a great example.
I want to ask you about the world's forests for a second, because I saw this story. The United States announced this week that it would contribute $1 billion towards a three-year, $3.5 billion anti-deforestation fund. The U.K. is part of this, Norway, Japan, France, Australia. They call it one of the most significant yet to emerge from the climate conference this week, and that it would aim to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by paying poorer countries not to cut down their forests. Gordon Brown, who's the Prime Minister of England, says that deforestation is responsible for 20% of global greenhouse gas emissions.
Right. I was actually hearing it was more like 25%. But yeah, that's one of the things for all the fossil fuel cars, the oil cars and the coal-fired power plants and all that. A fourth of all the greenhouse gas emissions come from places like Indonesia, where basically to earn a living, they cut down their forests. And they burn their forests. They either cut it down for timber or they burn them for agriculture to clear the land to create, grazing or pasture land or to grow crops. And that, there's two things about trees. One, they absorb carbon dioxide, and so they're what's known as a carbon sink. So they're, you know, they're one of the things that help keep the greenhouse gases from going out into the atmosphere where they create global warming. And two, when you cut them down, everything that they've stored gets released back into the atmosphere. So you not only lose, you know, the ability to absorb things, but they actually, you know, contribute more to the problem. And so that's one of the tactics, is how do we, you know, how do, it's not just forest. How do Indonesians earn a living without cutting down forests? How do Nigerians earn a living without pumping oil? Because that's where most of their revenue comes from. So we have to not only change our own economy, but we have to help other countries change theirs. It is a global problem.
Yep. All right, last thing I want to ask you here, Joel, I'm going to ask you to kind of be in public relations for just a second. Because I think that the climate change discussion gets off track sometimes, because there are people who are, whether they're deniers or they're lobbyists for big corporate industry, they're very good at cutting things down to basic, simple stuff that essentially scare people. If you do this, if you try to cut down on CO2 and methane and other greenhouse gases and all that sort of stuff, it's going to mean we don't have any more cows and we're not going to have any more cars and we're going to, you know, I mean, they're very good at using scare tactics there.
Sure.
What can people like yourself and like some of the people who were in Copenhagen this week as well, what can their message be to the average American who might look at this and go, I don't know what the truth is?
Well, you know, there's a lot of companies and some governments and others that have basically taken a no-regrets policy. And that basically says that even if climate change turned out to be a hoax, which some, you know, few people have suggested, and of course most scientists don't believe, that the steps that they were taking would still be good because they save money, they make healthy, reduce air pollution, they create jobs, they promote energy security, they help promote food security because we're not shipping food from across the world, we're doing it locally. They promote local communities, and there's a whole bunch of strategies that simply turn this, you know, help really create a better world. And even if climate change doesn't happen, and it turns out, which every scientist who believes it turns out to be dead wrong somehow, that the thing, there's a number of steps that we're taking around renewable energy and energy efficiency, and a whole range of other things that still make sense. And that's, you know, this is really about creating a better world, a better society. And I don't mean that in a kumbaya hold hands. This is about creating jobs, creating new businesses, creating better stuff for us and our kids. And even if there's no climate change, that can still happen if we take the right steps.
Joel McCower writes about these topics on a regular basis, travels all over the world talking about them. I know you've had a very, very busy year, and I appreciate you coming on and talking about your visit to Copenhagen earlier this week. And I know you're going to have a couple of weeks off, so enjoy the rest of your 2009, Joel, and thanks for your time today.
It's always a pleasure, Paul. Happy holidays.
You too. Joel is online at greenbiz.com, or you can read his blog at readjoel.com. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.